Welcome to the Numerologist Podcast, where we bring you a very special guest every single week to help guide you on your spiritual journey, live with abundance, and inspire your soul.
Hey, numerologist fans, welcome back to another episode of the Numerologist Podcast. I'm Rose, your host, and today I'm super excited about the guest we've got on the show because she is a witch and I just love talking to witches. Ayadi is a witch and a magical beast living in the heart of YouTube land. She creates content for modern pagan witches and esoteric queens looking to learn more. Ayadi loves to talk all things divination, especially with runes and geomancy, using ancient symbols to manifest your goals paired with spell work, witchcraft basics, soulmates and twin flames, alchemy and general spiritual transformations. So please join me in welcoming Ayadi to the podcast. Hey Ayadi, thank you so much for joining us on the Numerologist Podcast.
Thank you. I'm so excited to speak with you.
Thanks. So I'm so excited to speak with you too. I've been looking at your YouTube videos and your Instagram and those kinds of things, and I'm so excited to chat to you. I'd really like to understand a bit about who you are and what you do. So can you tell us a bit about that?
Sure. So I am a pagan YouTube creator. I mostly talk about witchcraft and paganism, but I also dive into other subjects like what other subjects do I dive into? Alchemy has been huge recently. Also soulmates and twin flames, as well as just all different types of magic and using the runes and geomancy for divination and just a lot of different things that coincide with magic. And I teach people how to use it and manifest their goals with certain types of magic.
Absolutely. Now, I did just want to talk about the divination tools you use. So which tools for divination do you use most often and why do you use them?
Most often I use runes and geomancy. So with runes, I actually, it's interesting. I learned them when I was in middle school. My like best friend at the time and I used to like write notes to each other in runes, like the coded messages and everything. And after a couple of years of doing that, I've realized there was so much more into it than just writing a coded message to my friend. And I started diving into learning more about rune lore and learning more about the culture and what runes really are. And then I just was, I realized, wow, I'm really interested in this. I want to dive more into it. And then learning more about like my personal history and my family culture and everything with witchcraft and having certain gifts and things like that, I realized that this was something more than just me being interested in one thing. It was me being interested in a broad range of witchcraft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so let's talk about that because a lot of sort of spiritual people, I'm grouping sort of witches and, you know,
yeah, all those spirituality in general. It's,
They sort of have a bit of a spiritual awakening or a coming out or a realization. When did you realize you wanted to go down this path?
I realized this when I was really young, actually, when I was probably around 13 or so, but I didn't actually dive into it until I was around 17, when I kind of gained more of my independence, moving out of my home, family home to go to college and things like that, 17 or 18. And I really started, you know, buying books and things like that and saying, okay, I'm really going to try this out and see how it works for me. And it became this whole journey for me. And it's been absolutely incredible. I'm still learning as I go, but every year it's just something new and something more interesting to me.
Yeah. And what would you say to people who are sort of just thinking about going into witchcraft and going down this path? Because I'll be honest, for me personally, I have been on a bit of a journey, and sorry, this is a bit of a personal.
I'm totally interested.
So for the last 2 years, I've sort of been going on this bit of a journey with myself. I started with Numerologist a couple of years ago, came on board as the blog manager, with sort of the skill set I had was more content rather than anything, you know, any spiritual knowledge. But since then, I've kind of learned from the best experts over the last few years, and it's kind of led me down this path where I think, you know what, I think I want to enter this world in some way. And one part of that I've been thinking about is witchcraft. But unlike you, you know, it's not something that's been there from my childhood, and my family probably wouldn't be so accepting of it. So
right.
what would you say to someone like me who's thinking about going down this path, doesn't really have that sort of family connection to anything spiritual really?
Okay. I would definitely say choose your own kind of path. You know, a lot of people say, you know, stick with what you know or whatever, like, you know, stick with your family because they are, you know, they're the ones that can take care of you and help you and things like that. But everyone has to have their own path. And I would say stick to what feels right for you. Like, your family might believe in something completely different from you or not believe in anything at all. But with you, try not to, you know, get stuck in other people's judgments or anything like that, and stick with what you feel is necessary for yourself. And if you're interested in learning more about witchcraft, then study witchcraft and study different types of traditions, different ways of going about it, and see what works best for you. My biggest advice is studying and practicing. A lot of people think that witchcraft is very easy. They see things on TV, and I wish sometimes I could just like wave my hand and something would happen, which 9 times out of 10 really doesn't happen unless like something from the universe just like clicks and like suddenly a tree falls out of nowhere and you're like, oh my God, like that was me. But I'd say studying has been one of my biggest things for me in helping myself out. And that's one of the reasons why I started my YouTube channel, was to study as much as I could, put it on video so that then I could have everything as a whole in one place. And that's helped me out in so many ways. And people have resonated with what I've created, which has been incredible. But study. It's the most important thing you can do as a witch.
Yes, absolutely. Like moving on from that, well, actually kind of related to that, I saw a video on your YouTube channel that was coming out as a witch. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really interesting because, you know, you hear of people coming out as homosexual and bisexual and all those kinds of things, but you never really hear about people coming out as a witch or a spiritual person and those kinds of things. But
yeah.
It really kind of resonated with me because I thought, you know what? It is this weird kind of feeling of, okay, I have to come out. So can you give us a bit of advice about sort of coming out as a witch and how you did it?
So it's a very long process, and it's one of those things that I'm still a little uncomfortable, like when I meet someone or something and they ask like, what do you do? Or, you know, what do your days look like around coronavirus? And I don't really share the fact that like I am a witch right away. I want to be a little more comfortable with someone or see where their heads are at in certain conversations and things. It's important to not just completely put yourself out there and be completely vulnerable, especially during these times where people are judging a lot. But once I feel comfortable with someone, once I feel like someone can handle this information that I'm giving them, which can be very strange to some people, I feel like I am more comfortable with it in sharing like what I do and who I am and how spiritual I am, in the sense that I like practice witchcraft and I am a pagan. A lot of people still don't really understand what that means. So I try to give them a little bit of a gist, like, I am a human being. I'm a person who just practices something different from what they do. And a lot of people recently have been awakened and are understanding that people are just that. They are people that practice a wide range of things. And just because something is called witchcraft doesn't mean that it's evil or scary. And that's, of course, one of the things I teach the most in my channel. Like, I'm just a person. I try to show people who I am before I specifically tell them, so by the way, I also practice witchcraft. And some people are like really fascinated by it. And they're like, oh my God, that's so cool. To which I say, I know. So it is kind of one of those things where you got to tread lightly. But once you find that comfortability, then definitely express yourself in whatever way you feel is necessary.
Yeah. Now, you're a pagan. What other kind of witchcraft or witches are there?
There are a lot, actually. I have a video that I just created called 18 Witchcraft Specialties and Types of Witches. It describes the different things that witches can study. And I feel like it's important for someone to study one thing at first and see if they like it and move on to another if they're not interested in it. So there are things like I'm looking to become an occult symbologist. So I study ancient symbols and how they relate to our world and how they were used back in the day, as well as how to use them to manifest your goals in spellcraft. There's also witches that can study crystals, all of the geology that goes into that, and the magical properties of them, herbalism, music as well. Music is huge. That a lot of people don't realize that the harmonics and everything that we deal with in our world and how music can actually access different parts of ourselves and like change our moods and things like that. Like you can see it in music right now, but if you were to actually study it and you understood music as a whole and how to use it in your spellcraft, that could be huge. There's also numbers, math, numerology. There's so many different things. Sea magic, draconic magic. Even knot magic is really interesting. I am terrible at knots. I actually work in the film industry, and one of the things you have to learn is how to do certain knots in order to handle equipment or put equipment away and stuff. And yeah, I would love to dive more into knot magic. So I'm looking forward to seeing more witches coming out and like sharing their stories, but also sharing their specialties so I can learn from them as well, because I mostly study one subject for the most part. So it's really cool when I can finally see other people like being one with themselves and saying, I study this thing, let me teach you everything I know. So yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, there's, like you say, there's so many areas of witchcraft. You could never possibly sort of be an expert in all of them, could you?
Right, right. I mean, I would love to know everything there is to know, but that's like a lifetime's worth of knowledge. And I always say a jack of all trades is a master of none. You know, I always want to dive into so many different topics and subjects. I do film, I do writing, I do witchcraft, I do YouTube, but I need to focus on one thing at a time so I can really hone whatever it is that I'm doing, because otherwise it'll get very confusing, very convoluted, and you'll spread yourself so thin that you won't be able to really make much of a difference in any of those subjects. So it's important to give yourself that time. So I try to give myself, whenever I'm studying something, I try to give myself like a 3 to 6 month window. So right now I'm studying alchemy as well as astrology. And I'm giving myself in between like those 3 months to do that. After that, I'm going to be studying the ancient Hebrew alphabet and the Akbeker, which is the Kabbalah of the Nine Chambers, which is an ancient system of like ciphering and coding, as well as numerology or gematria. So it's just important to give yourself that time in between subjects so that you can really, really like hone that knowledge and like can sink in much better.
Absolutely. And knowledge is power, isn't it? At the end of the day,
it completely is.
It empowers you to sort of realize or find your magical place, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, you just mentioned alchemy. Can you tell us a bit about what that is and how your learnings have taken you so far?
Yeah, so alchemy is interesting. I actually have a video series that I'm still continuing right now. But there's two different types of alchemy. There's spiritual alchemy and there's esoteric alchemy, material alchemy. And material alchemy is where you basically like the philosopher's stone, the chemistry that was in the Renaissance period before chemistry became a scientific matter. And then there's spiritual alchemy, it's which I kind of practice. And it's where you go through the alchemical processes, which there are seven, and you basically learn as much as you can in terms of like your spiritual transformation. It's a part of this like entire system of your body just completely being one with itself, shedding its ego, basically going through these stages in order to heal yourself and become an enlightened being. Because the most important thing in alchemy is becoming the philosopher's stone. And in spiritual alchemy, that just means becoming that one beautiful esoteric being that is completely shed of all of the craziness and all of the terrible things, that you can basically be one with the universe and change the world in some way.
And you've talked about the alchemical process, the spiritual side of it anyway, it's the process that many sort of soulmates and twin flames go through to sort of reach enlightenment. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Actually, I'm going to be coming out with a video soon.
I'm ruining all your videos.
No, it's funny. It's funny. It's like, yes, this is what I'm doing. Yes, it's happening. So I'm going to be going through the alchemical processes, but also another video about my twin flame separation and how that has coincided with the alchemical processes. So there's separation as well as fermentation. And fermentation is where you go through the putrefaction, which is the dark night of the soul, and also spiritization, which after you come out of that rotting of your soul, of that like crazy period of depression and being afraid and being alone, you finally come to terms with the situation and you rise up from that, like basically like a phoenix coming out of the ashes and just becoming a new version of yourself. And after that, you go through the distillation process, which is kind of like when you distill anything, you go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth until it's purified. And once it's purified, you go through the coagulation process, which is the last process. And basically, it's like you becoming that light being. And that's when the sun just shines on you. And it's just like, I am there. I am here. And my twin flame, it's really intense because my twin flame situation, I don't know what to call it. My twin flame experience has really gone through that seven alchemical processes basically to a T. So it's interesting feeling that and seeing that and understanding alchemy in that way and knowing, even though I am resisting at some point because I am a human being and, you know, it sucks going through that, like those terrible processes, but it's worth it in the end because you become a better version of yourself. It's very difficult. It's very painful. But once you finally just stop resisting and finally just accept the fact that, you know, it's there for a reason and you are basically there to change the world in some way. Once you really just like understand that, it's just like, okay, I'm going to work with the universe rather than against it. And basically I'm ready, you know, I'm ready.
Yeah. And I'm so hung up on that word you used, intense. That was the exact word I was going to use. Cause, you know, the process sounds super intense, but twin flame relationships can be super intense as well, can't they?
Oh yeah, definitely. It's intense because you see a different version of yourself. You see the opposite side of yourself. You mirror each other. So like the things that you hate about yourself, you see in them. The things they hate about themselves, they see in you. And the point is so that you guys can come together and work through those things. But with, you know, the human experience as well, most of the time we only really want what's easy for us rather than what's difficult. So that's one of the things that makes the twin flame experience very difficult as well, is the fact that we don't necessarily like seeing the bad in us or each other. We only really want to see the good and the easy. And once we, again, come to terms with that and say, this is here for a reason, we have to experience this. Otherwise, we're going to be lost. We're going to be stuck. We're going to be, you know, just, ugh, we don't want that. We want to be able to be the better versions of ourselves. So it's important for us as the runner or as the chaser, female, divine feminine, or the divine masculine, to experience this and understand it as something that is really important and even bigger than yourself as a human being. It's about the universal consciousness and everybody coming together in order to make a serious change. And it's one of those things where you can't really appreciate the good unless you go through the bad, because then you really want to make a difference. And the more difficult a situation is, the better the outcome, because you appreciate it so much better, like I said.
Yeah. And that brings me to some questions that we actually got from our audience, because
yay, questions.
a lot of them are very interested in soulmates and twin flames. So Morgan asks, I recently met my twin flame. What can I do?
Oh, well, Morgan, one of the things that you can do for yourself is to love yourself and accept yourself. That's one of the more difficult lessons of the twin flame experience, in my opinion, because being with your twin flame is one of those things, like I said, they are the other half of you. They are like your mirror. So if you don't love yourself, then they feel that and they express that to you in the opposite way. So it's number one, love yourself and treat yourself well, because they will also treat you well and love you if you do that. It's a very difficult process, especially in the very beginning. You're going to feel really great and everything's going to be great in the very beginning, but then the separation happens. You feel lost and lonely and like nothing can ever work out. You might come back together, but there's going to be those processes where you really have to be alone and be one with yourself in order to come back to them. And you have to also accept the fact that you guys might not end up together. 9 times out of 10, 8 times, whatever the statistics, you might not end up together. And if you don't, again, you have to accept that. And you have to be okay with the idea of even befriending your twin flame and not necessarily being with them physically or anything like that. You'll always be there with them mentally. You'll always be able to feel them, especially if you become closer. You'll always be able to like hear their thoughts and things like that. Maybe even astral projecting, dream states or anything like that. But one of the main things that I did wrong in my twin flame experience was not accepting the offer to be friends. And not that I regret it, I learned from it, but if I had that opportunity to befriend my twin instead of trying to control the situation and be the person that says, no, I can't be friends with you, I want to be with you, then maybe things would have been different for me. And maybe, we would have been closer in a different way. It's one of those things where accept yourself and accept them and accept the situation for what it is, and try not to your very best, try not to control the situation, because the universe is going to say no.
Yeah, that's great advice. But one thing that Morgan's question prompts me to ask personally is, mm-hmm. how would somebody know if they've met their twin flame? Is it a love at first sight thing, or is it going through those processes to sort of realize that might be a twin flame?
For me, it was love at first sight. And then I researched and I was like, oh, what is this? Because I can feel this person. And I literally looked into his eyes and I felt there was something there. But for some people, it could be very different. For my karmic soulmate, I didn't really know for sure at first until I started feeling it a couple of months later. So it really depends on you and how you feel in the moment and how you feel the situation is progressing. You can definitely most likely feel them from afar, feel them when they're near you. When at one point my twin flame had gotten a tattoo and I had no idea, but my arm was hurting really badly at that weekend. And then the day like that I saw him after that fact, he was like, oh, look at my tattoo. And I was like, oh my God, this is insane. this person is definitely connected to me. So you will feel some sort of connection, whether it's a physical connection, a mental connection, or anything like that. Another interesting thing that I noticed about twin flames was that they have a polarity when it comes to zodiac signs. My twin flame is a Scorpio and I am a Taurus. So that's really interesting because that's also a good indication. Like if your twin flame is the opposite sign of yours, then, or if the person is the opposite sign of yours, then that's a sign that they could be your twin flame as well. But yeah, it's more about you and how you feel and the synchronicities as well. Whether it's like they read your mind, they say things exactly the way that you are going to say them. Like that happened to me when I had my first interaction with my twin flame. I was literally going to ask him if he wanted to go out for a drink. And 2 minutes later, he asked me that specific question when mm-hmm. we were at work. So it was like, it was one of those things where it's like, you will definitely know that this person is something more than what they are. And then it's up to you to see the signs that they might be your twin flame.
Yeah. Now, we have a couple more questions, but they're more about soulmates. So okay. Before we go to that, could you just tell us what is the difference between a twin flame and a soulmate?
So there are a couple different types of soulmates, but for a twin flame, they are technically the other half of you. They are, what's the word? They are like two peas in a pod being born together at the same time. And then they separated in different lifetimes in order to come back to each other once they're ready, once all of their ego and everything has been dealt with and everything that they've learned in their lifetimes has been dealt with, I guess I would say. And the reason that twin flames are there is to change the vibrations of the world, to change something, make a difference in some way. But they can only do that once they've gone through all of those processes in order to come back to each other. But it's not necessarily guaranteed that it's going to be happening, of course, in this lifetime, because they follow each other and come back together throughout like multiple lifetimes until they're completely ready. And the main thing about twin flames is that spiritual transformation, that just complete enlightenment in order to make a difference. So the difference between a twin flame and, say, a karmic soulmate is someone that comes into your life during moments when your past karma are coming to light. And in order for you to get through it, they come into your life, kind of show you what's happening in some sort of way. You probably might not even really see it, but they will come into your life in order for you to wipe that karma clean and just be better without that karma, like just feeling so much better without it. The thing about karmic soulmates is, though, that you can easily fall for your karmic soulmate because they're very much like you. In the sense that like their karma is very similar. So it's important to know that you shouldn't be with your karmic soulmate because it's not one of those things that you're really supposed to do. You're not supposed to be with someone that causes that karmic destruction because it's just not good for you. For some reason, the universe really just says, no, don't do that at all. I'm not completely sure why, aside from the fact that it's very karma based and they're only there for you to wipe that karma clean. Mm-hmm. There are also different other types of soulmates, like family soulmates, soul families that come together and basically help each other in different ways. It can be really anyone that you know, someone in your family, a really close friend that you've literally just followed throughout your lifetimes that feel connected to you. A lot of the times, or not a lot of the times, the main thing about soulmates is that you kind of have a soul contract, which is basically something that you agree upon in your previous life or before you come to this lifetime, so that your soul can learn as much as you can during this lifetime. And if you don't learn those lessons, something in the contract can be null and void and something could happen. Something bad can happen because you didn't learn that specific lesson or something like that. So it's important for us to read those signs. I know it's really hard and difficult sometimes. I interpret things wrong a lot, actually. And then in retrospect, I say, oh, that's what that actually meant. Oops. But yeah, it's one of those things where interpreting the signs can be difficult, but once you see them, once you see the universe taking you to a specific direction, follow that, because it can lead you to a great place. There are also soulmates that are there for you to love and be with. These are like soul partnerships. You may feel like you need to be with your twin flame or something, but then there is that soulmate that's there for you to make your life easier. Your soulmate is there, so your twin flame is there for you to basically destroy everything that you know. And they tear you completely apart. It's like your entire being is just like thrown into the pits so that you can just crawl your way up and just, you know, be this amazing, strong, like incredible thing. But in between that time, or if you decide, screw that for this lifetime, I can't do it, there are those soulmates that are there for you to make everything easier and just be there for you and be that person that just makes you smile every single day. Mm-hmm. And some people strive for that. And I say, go for it. Whatever makes you happy. If you're not ready for the twin flame experience, if you're not ready for that, like, you know, intense, scary, profound, just moment, that's okay. Because I understand. And man, I don't wish this craziness on anyone if they're not ready for it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's a lot that goes into the soul connections. And yeah, if you're ready for it, go for it.
And what's funny about what you just said about that, you know, that twin flame relationship, it actually, you know, if you were describing this to just any random person on the street, it would sound like a toxic relationship.
It does.
So are twin flame relationships inherently toxic?
I would say they're inherently toxic, but it's because of your internal struggles already. They mirror what you're feeling on the inside, and they are hard lessons. Toxic, yes, but lessons nonetheless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's powerful to understand as well, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So, sorry, back to our questions.
I hear it in your voice. You're like, oh my God.
Do you have any simple spells for attracting a new relationship or meeting your soulmate?
Oh, interesting. For those, I would definitely say, don't focus on anything specific or any specific person. Focus on the general feeling of love in your life and the general feeling of bringing that love towards you. I do have a couple of love spells that I put on my channel during Valentine's Day. And yeah, there are a couple things that you can use. There are some runes, like the Gufu rune, which is the rune of relationships, bringing that energy towards you. There is a geomantic figure called Puer and one called Puella. Puer meaning boy, Puella meaning girl. If you want to bring that female or male energy into your life in order to find that person, you can focus on those symbols. But I would generally say, do a spell that isn't specific to that person, and it's just something to bring that love and light into yourself, and also bring the energy toward you, not specifically a person. Because when you focus on a specific person, you could probably, you know, get that person to fall in love with you. But internally, you'll probably be thinking, do they love me because I wrote the spell? Or do they love me because they actually love me? So you don't want to ever question that. You don't want to ever put someone else's energy at risk either. There are also psychic defenses that people have, and they might resist that psychically, and it might backfire on you in some way, and you might not receive any sort of love. So yeah, I do sometimes give people like spells that I've written, but I say that a spell is important for you to do yourself. Write a spell with your own words with your own energy, because at the end of the day, like, I could totally do a spell that would work for me because I wrote it specifically for me, but for you, it could be completely different. There could be things in your life that you might want differently than I do. So I think it's important for people to create their own spells and also put their energy towards it completely.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, a question from Of Mountains and Gems. The question is, do you cast spells? Well, firstly, we know you do. And do they actually work? How do they work? And I'm going to ask an additional question to that. What happens if they don't work?
Ah, okay. So it's funny, like, everything you guys are asking, like, I have specifically, like, dealt with these in videos as well, where it's like that internal struggle of my spell not working. And I'm just like, what the hell? What happened? Why didn't it work? And I, like, kind of obsess over it. So for the first question, yes, I do cast spells, not as often as some people may think. I try not to cast too many at a time because I want that time for the spell to work. I don't want to convolute it with other energy or anything. And when a spell does work, I generally write it in my journal and just say how long it took to work and things like that. I work with the energy of the universe. I also saying work with the energy of the universe, I see what's happening in my life and I basically work with that energy and say, this is how I'm going to draw this into my life. And I also use ancient symbols to do this. Generally, I use either runes or geomantic symbols because those are what I use the most. And I will draw them, the symbols, on a mirror. And I will focus on that symbol while asking for what I'm looking for. And that will help the energy basically project out into the world and work for me in any sort of way. I also sometimes use sigils as well, but I'm working towards learning a little bit more into them because there's a lot that goes into sigil magic. What was the third question? I can't remember.
Well, the third question was, how do they work? And then it was, what happens if they don't work?
What happens if they don't work? I freak out a little bit because sometimes I'm just like, well, it should have worked. I have cast a spell time and time again. But sometimes it's an internal thing as well. Sometimes it's what I'm thinking at the moment. Sometimes it's literally like me dealing with something internally, whether it's bad, whether it's stressful. If I'm stressed out, a lot of the times my spells don't work until like months later. So you have to kind of notice what's happening in your life and see if it's the best thing for you at that time. And if it is, then you go from there. But you have to be in the right headspace, because if you're not in the right headspace, then it will definitely skew things in a different direction. It'll delay things because you're not focusing completely on what your goal is. You're focusing on so many other things. That's why, like, meditation a lot of the time is very important when you practice witchcraft or do spells in general, because you have to be clear of everything in your mind that could, like, alter your spell in any sort of way. Actually, it's funny because a spell that I did 3 or 4 months ago to find something, which I have done a million times, didn't end up working until yesterday when I found it in the most random place ever. And I was just like, okay, I guess now's the right time. It can be very random sometimes, but once you really clear your mind and focus on what you need and let everything that's happening in your life and in the world just give that a rest for a moment, then you can finally focus on your goals and you can finally get spells that can work.
Mm-hmm. And do you think assessing whether a spell has worked or not worked is sort of sometimes a matter of perspective? Obviously, you know, with finding something that's a physical, you have to find something, but do spells sometimes manifest in different ways?
Yeah, it's interesting because you can focus as much as you can on a spell and you can think about the way that you want it to manifest and it can work in a completely different way with someone else involved, which you have no idea how that's going to happen or how that can transpire. Sometimes it literally will happen and you won't know anything about it until someone mentions something and says, oh, Well, that's my spell, I think. Is that? Oh, okay. So that's the direction I need to be going in order to get that to fully work. Yeah, that's happened to me a couple of times. Once I was looking for an apartment and I was freaking out and like nothing was happening and I did this spell and it was not working in any sort of way. And then so like I mentioned to a friend, I was like, oh man, like I'm looking for this apartment. Never even thought to talk to my friends about it because I just like, you know, I just need to focus on this and my spell will work. And then my friend was like, oh, well, I have someone that's actually looking for a roommate. Do you want to like, you know, check this place out? Checked it out the next day, got the apartment. And that's how it happens sometimes in ways that you have no idea. But with spell work, you have to put those feelers out. You have to show the universe that you're trying and you're still working hard towards your goal. And remember that it can happen in any sort of way. So don't let things pass you by. If you have an opportunity, take that opportunity, and that can create an opportunity for your spell to completely work.
Yeah, that's great advice. Now, one question that I will end on today, it's from Lay Locus. Any cautions and rituals to pay special attention to for realigning in June?
Well, I would say there's some rituals that you can do in order to kind of protect yourself and your aura. You can take salt baths and things like that and use certain herbs that can help you. You can also, excuse me, you can also do certain meditations to kind of brighten your being. Doing grounding exercises, like standing completely upright, kind of like a tree, just thinking about yourself receiving that shining light from the sky and just thinking about the entire light just going all the way down your body, just down until the roots of your feet, and just like grounding yourself in that sort of way. You can also wear any like protective amulets or anything like that. You can wear the E'och rune, which is the rune of protection, anything like that. It's really hard to say with these times because things are changing so much what we should really do. But I think just taking care of yourself in whatever way that you can, and using the proper protective measures in the human sense as well as the spiritual sense. Yeah. I hope that answered the question.
Yeah, I think it did. I think it did. I've really enjoyed chatting to you today. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. I will put links to your YouTube channel and Instagram and those kinds of things in the show notes. So yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you. This has been great.
Thank you for listening to the Numerologist podcast. If you loved it, make sure you subscribe and don't forget to check the show notes for an extra special free gift.